Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We are joined today, once again, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt joins us, along with Dr. Regina Spellers. They co-edited this incredible book that just the expanse of it is almost frightening to consume and think about, but it's there. It's called Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Body Politics in Africana Communities, and Drs. Kimberly Moffitt and Regina Spellers, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
So this, it really is, I think, you know, this discussion about body politic and hair, and it's age old, but what you've done here is take this subject, which has caused so much consternation and controversy, so much pride and power, all the complexities of it, found all these incredible intellects to think about it and write about it, and try to put this kind of large political, historical, cultural compendium together to make us wrestle with this issue. Is that about right, Kimberly?
That is. That is it. Well done.
And you could look at this book as an academic book, but clearly you have another idea in mind than just academics for this book.
Much more expansive than just academic. I actually used this text in a class that I taught under the title of Seminar in Black Hair and Body Politics last semester at UMBC. But it is also a text that we wanted to be accessible to the wider Africana community or anyone that's interested in these types of issues. So we were most interested in being able to get into community organizations, get into book clubs, having folks really want to interrogate some of the issues that we explore here that we deal with regularly but never have an opportunity to articulate in ways that we were able to in the text.
Do you all think there is another culture, another people's culture on the planet Earth where the intricacies of body and hair and sexuality in terms of how people are perceived, fear, loathing, love, and lust, and all the rest that fit into what happens to African Americans and the African diaspora in particular. I mean, it almost seems like something born out of the attack on the African continent and the beginning of slavery that created something that I can't think of any other culture that has the same intensity around these issues. Every culture has the issues, but the same intensity of issues.
And I think I would agree. I mean, certainly the context of the enslavement of Africana people, you know, throughout the world has played a role in how we're perceived, you know, even today. And so there are these interesting and complex and dynamic ways in which the body is read and misread. The black body in particular is read and misread. But certainly there are, you know, other groups that do face this issue of having their body misunderstood and politicized in certain ways. What's interesting, though, when we look at it across the globe and across the diaspora for other ethnic groups, it does, you know, come down to skin, hair texture, body size. And, you know, oftentimes it's because, you know, if you have a darker hue or are not thin or have curlier hair, all which are, you know, attributes that can be linked with, you know, individuals of African descent, you know, it becomes problematic. It becomes something that other groups have to, you know, negotiate and navigate. So there is something, you know, to be said, is something that is linked with, you know, being a person of color and in particular a person of African descent. But we certainly don't want to stop there. We also in this volume celebrate the black body because so much of the work that has been done previously has stopped at that place where we, you know, look at the problems and the issues associated with living in this black body and the everyday lived experience. But we take a step further and also celebrate the black body. I think that's important to articulate.
One of the things that that you explore in the beginning of the introduction and different parts of the authors and many of the authors who have written in this compendium is that hair and the African world go back way beyond the issue of that in the modern world and slavery and where we are now. That the nations that black folk came from on those slave ships, that hair and what kind of hair and how it was braided and how it looked and how it was designed had said something about the function of society. So, Kimberly, what's interesting is this goes back, it's something got from the soul of people from beyond, not just something that was kind of some modern articulation or modern kind of interpretation because of racism and slavery in America.
Most definitely. And so much of what we understand about the experience of Africans on the continent is hair symbolized so many things. It symbolized your status, whether you were a married woman or an unmarried woman. It may even signify something about your socioeconomic status. It certainly conveyed your connection to particular tribal affiliations. So there's a lot of history that's very much deeply connected and deeply rooted to the experience of hair and what it communicates in the Africana community. Of course, with the interaction with Europeans, especially in this country, what we then noted was a shift in terms of how we understood our hair and how we understood ourselves, our bodies, in which we were then being given messages that countered what we thought about ourselves in many ways that then made us question whether or not all of these things that we thought were fabulous and phenomenal about ourselves were in fact brought into question and made us start to think maybe we didn't embody beauty the same way that Europeans saw beauty, which then, of course, raises questions about how we look upon ourselves. And that becomes one of the more contemporary issues that we find ourselves faced with when we're talking about hair and body at this point, where we're in a space where we can occupy at the same time bodies or hair that is both revered and reviled all at the same time,
right?
Where it was not as much an issue previously.
And there's a quote you have here in the beginning of your piece, and before I talk about this other part that I think is really significant, a piece of history that we don't talk about much. You have a quote in here from one of the scholars. As any geneticist can tell you, human beings are more than 99.9% alike. But in that fraction of a percent, vast differences can be found between ethnic groups, such as susceptibility to certain diseases, skin color, and hair texture. And that, those things, were utilized by oppressor societies to demean, belittle, and put people in a certain place.
All in 1%.
All in 1%. All in 1%. All in 1%.
Yes. A great deal becomes understood about how we wanted to continue the socially constructed understanding of race to the point that we wanted to differentiate ourselves from different groups by focusing just on that 1%.
We have to take a very brief break. We're going to come right back with our two guests, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt and Dr. Regina Spellers, talking about their new book, Blackberries and Red Bones, A Critical Articulation of Black Hair Body Politics in Africana Communities. Number here is 410-319-8888. Join us with your thoughts and comments. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. Once again, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt graces our studio. She's Assistant Professor of American Studies at UMBC. She and Dr. Regina Spellers, who is at DePaul University at the School of New Learning, have co-edited a book, Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair Body Politics in Africana Communities. One of the things interesting, but you also talk about in this book, is the power of the really complex issue of the power of the business of black hair. In terms of the market share of black hair products is huge. I mean, way beyond the numbers of black folks in America in terms of where the money is, how the money was in the black world is no longer in the black world, and also what it says about all the complexities of hair, period. I mean, let's talk a bit about that and what some of your authors have said. Let's start with Regina Sellers.
Well, you know, we as African descended people, we spend a lot of money on hair. You know, we like to look good. And we've also, to a certain degree, you know, have bought into what is indicative of our 21st century culture that is the focus on visibility and how you're perceived. You know, we bought into that as well. So, you know, this notion of what is beautiful, what is deemed beautiful, and if you can go out and purchase products to help you to feel more beautiful, more attractive, that's what you do. And unfortunately, because we also have this sort of history of not being always viewed as beautiful or always being able to see ourselves on television, in the media, projected in positive, beautiful lights, that it becomes even more, more of an issue, more of a concern, and more of a trapping so to speak, for us to pursue that. And then also, you know, it is a huge marketplace. And I think also one thing that we do address and have addressed in our many conversations since the book has come out is that, it also creates an opportunity for us to develop products for natural hair, for individuals who want to wear their hair natural or want to explore their African roots and go back to using some of the products that we used in the motherland or some of the ingredients that we use to be able to reincorporate that in our lives and have a more natural approach, which is also something that we, address in the volume and some of our authors do also talk about. I mean, we have 26 chapters in this volume.
Yes.
Written by independent writers, academic writers, creative writers, before written by Hakeem Ihobuti. I know your listeners may be aware of him, the poet and publisher of Third World Press. So, it is a very extensive book that does cover a variety of topics, including what you mentioned in terms of money and how it is an important role in marketing the black body.
Want to add a little bit, Regina?
I think Regina has really captured most of what we were trying to convey when we talked about profiting that happens in the black community, in particular when it comes to hair issues. I mean, we've got quotes that talk about African Americans as a group spend 50 to 60% more on hair products than white consumers do. That's quite significant. We also can talk about, or it leads us into a conversation about the role of consumer power that we have or the lack thereof when we know now that many of us are buying our products, our hair products, from places and from individuals that don't look like us. And in the process of that, it means that those dollars never
don't stay
in the community.
And that part
even though those businesses are in the community.
And it's all exactly. And it's also that when you describe how the larger corporations in the world have bought out all the black-owned companies that made these products originally.
That's right.
So it changes the whole dynamic of relationship to the economy.
That's right. It changes the dynamic to the relationship to the community, but it also, again, takes away this sense of ownership or this sense of connection to the products that you're actually buying because you're going into places, you're going into establishments where the individuals don't look like you, they aren't a part of the community, they're just simply providing a service to you, and then they leave the community with those dollars. And so there isn't this, now we're in a space where we're functioning with our hair products always through a middleman. There's never this direct contact that we have with the person who is making and producing and then creating these products that we then put on our hair.
Just some of the stats that I wrote down from the book, they're pretty amazing that what you said earlier, 56% African Americans as a group spend 50 to 60% more on hair products than white consumers, which is amazing. 30% 30% of the spending share in America, which is just phenomenal. I mean, it's huge, huge.
We billions like good looking hair.
Nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, billions of dollars.
Yes.
And how these major companies like L'Oreal bought out by Soft Sheen and Belter Culver purchased Proline and it just goes on and on.
Yes.
This is a really kind of, you grapple with this in this book, which is one of the reasons. So folks can call us here 410-319-8888. This is a book that just makes you kind of stop and think every time you read a chapter. And I will admit, I didn't get the PDF till this weekend, so I haven't read the whole book yet. I read enough of it to know that I'm going to have to read the whole thing and have you all back for a long discussion here.
Wonderful.
And
wonderful.
Maybe with some of the editors. I just think this is really good. You also capture some other things, though, which is the weird, there's an incredible piece in there called The Dominican Dance Floor. That chapter
by a creative writer, actually.
Yes, I mean, it was the way it's written as well. I could tell that.
Yeah.
And the kind of, as you write about this, the kind of paradox that goes on there about hair and skin color in the Dominican, the Dominican Republic, right next door to Haiti, the loathing, hatred, and love that goes on with respect to the African diaspora culture of Haiti, but also the African diaspora culture of the Dominican Republic.
Yeah. Which isn't always embraced.
Right.
Right. But again, we're working in that space where we're talking about black hair and the body being both revered and reviled all at the same time. Because depending on the texture of the hair and how you wear it, it is something that is revered versus someone who has a darker skin hue may not be revered in the same way and in fact reviled. And this particular creative writer offered us a voice of what her own experience was like there and how she saw sitting around her oftentimes in, you know, nightclubs.
When she described what happened to her on the dance floor.
Yes.
In
yes.
that particular chapter.
Yes. Was it powerful to you?
It's, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, where it was, you know, she was, I mean, it was almost this, because she was dark.
Right.
It was almost this sexual attack by somebody who was clearly from the African diaspora, but much lighter complexion and Dominican.
That's right.
Who assumed she was Haitian.
That's right.
I mean, it was just, that was just...
That and the hair texture, too.
Right, that and the hair texture.
In terms of how she chose to wear her hair.
Right.
That made her more African-like and gave almost a space in which individuals thought it was okay to invade or impose upon her and her body in ways that is just not acceptable at all.
Now, the complexities of hair, body, and the oppression of 400 years, as well as the kind of power and pride that comes out of the Africana diasporic world as well. I mean, that goes to play in all that. So to create this kind of 20th century contradictory consciousness, for want of a better term, that right. we have. Regina.
Well, one of the things that we do comment on, we're very adamant about it, that you can't talk about the black body without talking about hair. Can't talk about hair without talking about skin tone and complexion. Can't talk about skin tone and complexion without talking about, you know, class and gender and sexuality. So all of these issues are interrelated. Religion, able-bodiedness, you know, they're interrelated, they're intersecting, they're interlocking. And they do play upon our psyche as African descendant people. And it's, you know, these interlocking oppressions that we have to negotiate and navigate and really become conscious of and aware of as we live in our everyday lived experience. You know, some of the authors talk about, you know, having an experience of having their body read in a particular way in which was totally, you know, foreign to them. You know, perhaps this person was, you know, was a curvy plus size, you know, woman, and then she's being read as an ancient mama or a mama figure when that's far from, you know, maybe her personality. And so there are things in which, you know, we carry with us in our bodies based on how we're read and how we're perceived and misperceived. And it's really important for us to get this information out because it does help to educate us and help to create these conversations throughout the diaspora so that when we talk about the Dominican Republic, you know, we can say and be reminded that there are, you know, there is an African history there. There's an African presence there. And so to deny that or to ignore that is really ignoring yourself. We can talk about the chapter that the author wrote about in South Africa and her experience of being Indian and African and her body being read in a particular way and her having to struggle between those two identities. And so, you know, we do have authors who've written across the globe and contributed to this volume throughout Europe, the U.S., throughout the diaspora, who really sort of echo this notion that these interlocking oppressions, you know, are playing a real important role in how they're perceived.
I think it's time for us to take a break, is it not? We will, and we will come right back with our guests as we continue a conversation about black berries and red bones, critical articulations of black hair, body politics in Africana communities by the two authors, the editors of this great volume, Dr. Regina Spellos, you just heard, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt in the studio. As we go to break, let me tell you the Mark Sanna Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. So don't lose your house.
Going to ring, and we want to.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are talking here this hour with Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, who's Assistant Professor of American Studies at UMBC, Dr. Regina Spellards, who is at the School of New Living at DePaul University in Chicago. New Learning. I can't read my own writing. I apologize. But what I can read is what's typed on the page, which is they're co-editors of this incredible new book, Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair Body Politics in Africana Communities. So new, as a matter of fact, I had to read it as a PDF, but the book is out now. So you can call you 410-319-8888. During the break, Kimberly, you were talking about how when you look at the scheme of things affecting the world and African Americans and Africana communities, poverty and any other issues, education issues, so many other issues, that this can almost seem insignificant.
Yes.
But it's not.
No, not at all. And in fact, one of the things that we try to convey in the volume and certainly in talks that we've been doing based off of the volume is to make the argument that so much of how we understand and see ourselves becomes very vital to what we find ourselves capable of doing as we evolve into adulthood. And so when I think about my own research that has my newest research area that has spawned from this particular work that Regina and I did, a lot more of my attention is being focused on young Africana individuals.
Right, the hip-hop culture.
Trying to focus on their own self-concept, their self-definition, their self-image, their self-esteem, because all of that will then directly impact what they see themselves capable of accomplishing and doing in the future. And if you think about it on another level, and I'm sure some of my psychology colleagues would say, absolutely not, Kimberly, I can't believe you even said this. But if you think about it, if that is intact, if you feel good about yourself, if you feel centered in much of what you do, then you can find yourself going in directions that avoid so many of these other issues in terms of poverty, in terms of choices and regarding your sexual direction, in terms of what you choose to do or how you choose to behave sexually. So a number of these things can be, in fact, directly or at least at some level indirectly related to how you feel about yourself. And so it's so important for us to have these conversations with young folks so that they do feel more centered and feel more confident about who they are in their skin with the hair and the hair texture that they have so that some of these issues can be avoided.
So, talk a bit about... Go ahead, Regina.
That I was just going to add,
please.
You know, and Kimberly is right on point with that, but also we also mention and have real statistics associated with the real corporeality of the black body. So that if the black body is read as less than, and oftentimes you're treated as less than, although of course we've made certain strides in our society, and racism doesn't look the same way it did in the 1960s. But at the same time, there are ways in which the black body is read in certain ways and treated in certain ways in terms of the housing, whether you have access to housing because of your skin color, whether you're regulated for certain jobs, whether you are tracked in certain studies for school. And so these issues do have real impact in a very material way, so that it is tied to your self-esteem, but also tied to your advancement in society.
That's so key. Regina is speaking about some of the research that's been done that, in fact, shows us that children, in particular those of lighter hues, if you track them or follow them, they tend to do better academically, that they then, of course, have greater opportunities in terms of education, higher education, which, of course, then leads directly into how well you excel outside of college in terms of your occupation or employment, which, of course, then gives you other opportunities to the type of living that you want to have, those material possessions that you want to acquire. So it's amazing that something that in many ways a lot of us see as insignificant to the overall, plethora of issues that the Africana community may be embracing or having to deal with in the U.S., that it, in many ways it can impact in such negative ways that it keeps you from being able to enjoy the opportunities that are out here in front of us.
So that which was institutionalized in terms of even today's world, in terms of skin color, in terms of hair texture, in terms of how one wears their hair. These things that were almost cast in stone, if not by written law, then by this is how society
social mores.
Social mores.
Yeah.
That they have now become part, in some ways, insidiously, of consciousness that is almost denied that it exists. It's camouflaged in some senses.
Yes, I would say so. And I think the other part that we don't always like to have as a conversation is the role that those of us in the Africana community become complicit in that process as well.
That's so, part of the book as well. There's some several chapters, several
yes,
people have written
yes,
on that.
Yes, I mean,
issue, right?
And it's important, although, again, a very sensitive, tenuous conversation to have, that's part of why we wanted to make the volume accessible to such a wide audience so that we could have these conversations, because only in having some of these conversations can we get past some of this. And I think that's one of the issues that we really tried to deal with. Even though we wanted to make sure we were critiquing and celebrating, we also wanted folks to understand that even within the Africana community, many times we have been complicit in maintaining certain structures in terms of how we look upon each other, in terms of how our bodies are read or how particular hairstyles are read, that we in fact ourselves within that same community impose those negative interpretations or readings to the body or hair ourselves, which then does nothing but help to reinforce that oppressive state that's already been placed upon us.
I just think that one of the beauties of how you put this book together was the, which made me think of it as you were describing, what you were describing, Kimberly, is the breadth of writers, men, women, gay, straight,
that's right,
from all over to write about these issues, so that you really kind of, if you take time to go through them, you don't necessarily find answers, but you find plenty to wrestle with that can lead to answers.
Right.
Regina.
Right. And also raise more questions. I mean, after each chapter, our authors and contributors, wrote discussion questions for people to be able to relate, to be able to have this ongoing conversation. They have wonderful references and citations. So if you're looking to really explore this, not even from just an academic position, because we know that there's people out there who are interested in this topic that are not necessarily in the academy, but there's wonderful references and sources that they can look from and pull from to see, you know, what has been said over time? What is being said now? What are some of the trends about these ideas that we can follow up on and really have conversations in the barbershop, in the beauty shop, you know, at our homes, in our coffee shops, you know, in our book clubs, and after we listen to the radio show, you know, how can we continue this conversation and really sort of delve into these issues? So we do have some discussion questions that will help guide you to understand some of these concepts. And another thing that I wanted to point out is, you know, the title, we also are very, very careful about, you know, what we named our book. And the BlackBerry does not refer to, you know, the BlackBerry phone. We have, you know, a lot of...
It's not?
who may be younger, who not realize, you know, the history, you know, around some of these times. And so when you really delve and understand, you know, that history, you really have a different consciousness and a different approach. So that in 1929, Wallace Thurman, you know, had a book that was published, The Black of the Berry, a novel of Negro life. And so he refers to the black of the berry, the sweet of the juice, and that became a phrase that was coined to refer to the black body, the beauty of the black body, the sexuality of black skin and black female body. And the red bones is a term that was used to refer to the New Orleans in the southern hemisphere of our country, referring to the lighter skin tone, being able to see the red veins underneath their skin, and then being able to pass perhaps for a different ethnicity, but also referring to the red bone hound dog that was used in the South to track slaves. And so we hear these terms in our music and the rap, and, you know, the young people are using some of these terminology, and they may not really know some of that history. So when you read the book, you come across some of this language, some of these terms. You know, in my chapter, I came across the history associated with Josephine Baker and the fact that she had a Baker Fix hair gel and Baker's skin complexion cream, you know, and who knew? We know her of the singer, of the dancer,
right,
an ambassador, but we don't really know some of the history around, you know, her experience in the black body. And so when you read the book, you're able to come up with some of those histories, some of those terms, and some of those products that were lost over time and really get an understanding and a sense of how important it is for our culture and for other people to understand this as well.
We have to take a very brief break. When we come back, we're going to explore one of the interesting chapters at the end of the book. This is chapters on dreadlocks, which is really fascinating, which we'll grab a hold of.
That's not mine, though, Mark. And you said fascinating.
I'm sorry. But yours was fascinating, too. You can come back to your chapter. And a lot more. So stay with us as we explore Blackberries and Red Bones, critical articulations of black hair, body politics in Africana communities. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner here with LaFontaine Oliver, General Manager of WEAA 88.9 FM.
I'm going to have to come in here more often.
I think so.
But you know what? It's great to be here. It's great to be in the midst of our spring membership drive. We come to our listeners only two times a year, and we ask them to pledge their financial support. Now, there are many other stations who will come to you a bunch of times throughout the year. We do this two times because we know when we put the call out that you guys are going to respond. And we have some folks to thank. But before I thank those folks, we still have eight calls.
410-319-8888.
That's
410-319-8888.
Right. 410-319-8888. I know that we can do that. I mean, 15 new and renewing members for this hour is a very, very reachable goal, especially for a show that has the reach that this show does. I know that because I see the numbers. I see the Arbitron numbers. I see the numbers during our stream. The number of folks that are listening at any given point online. You can pledge securely online at weaa.org. You can call in. You can make your pledge. We can invoice you. You can put it on the card of your choice. Again, if you'd like to spread those payments out, I like the $10 a month for the next 12 months. And you can get a copy of this wonderful book. There's some other things if you'd like to call in, the folks can tell you about. But the thing that you get most is knowing that you have done your part to preserving something that is so important in this community, which is public radio. 410-319-8888.
410-319-8888 is the number. And you make a pledge of $88 or more. As I've said, we will give you a copy of Blackberries and Red Bones as our gift to you.
Yep.
Incredible book. I mean, this is something that your book club would want to read, that you want to sit around and kind of really wrestle with and think about. It's just fascinating writing and good writing. As well, 410-319-8888 is number to show your support for WEAA right now, as these people did.
That's right. A couple of people have stepped up already. I would like to give a thanks to Linda Durrell. Thank you so much. She comes in as a new member. Go ahead, hit your bell. Where's your bell?
Bing!
Okay, there you go. New member, Linda, we thank you so much. She came in at that $120 pledge level, $10 a month. That's easy. It's easy on the pocket.
I love that. That's great.
I like that a lot. Let's see. Would also like to thank Jim Robinson. Jim, thank you very much. Jim came in and he did an installment as well. He said, hey, he wants to pick up that book.
And why not?
Also, Harold Phillips. Harold came in as a renewing member, and he made a generous pledge and also said he loves the show and has been listening, Mark, to you for 5 years. And your interesting topics have caused his reading to just increase
that's
immensely.
I like to hear.
So,
that's good.
And obviously, he wanted to pick up a copy of this this book as well. Corey McCray, thank you very much. Yes,
a rising star in the trade union movement. He is the founder and president of the Young Trade Unionist Movement. He's a really interesting young man.
I think I heard him on our airwaves. Is that correct?
Yes, he's a brother that came from the corner, could have gone many ways, but instead he's now a union leader. He's an amazing guy.
All right, and we also would like to thank Piara McKinnon, excuse me if I mispronounced that, another new member. Where's your bell? Come on now.
Ding!
All right, another new member. She stepped up, and she has made that transition from being a listener to a listener supporter, and that is so key. Please call that number. I would like for Mark to reach this goal for this hour. I know he would like to reach this goal. 410-319-8888. Make your pledge of support today. You can get a copy of this book at $88, and you can continue to read this and discuss it with your family and friends. But call and make your pledge of support. Again, we need eight additional calls for this hour in order to meet that goal.
And 410-319-8888 is a number. Please make those calls now. We have books here available, Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, body politics in Africana communities will be yours. Everyone who calls in at 410-319-8888, the name is dropped in a hat. You may win a trip for two to Curaçao, the Caribbean's hidden treasure. Beautiful island, beautiful place. Mm-hmm. Attend the North Sea Jazz Festival September 2nd and 3rd. That's Labor Day weekend. It includes airfare and hotel accommodations and two tickets to the Curaçao Jazz Festival. And Stevie Wonder, Dionne Warwick, Sting, Terrence Blanchard, Pancho Sanchez, Ruben Blades, and more. First, you got to call 410-319-8888. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner here with Dr. Kimberly Moffitt and Dr. Regina Spellers. Kimberly Moffitt's been a guest on the show many times. She's assistant professor of American Studies at UMBC. Regina Spellers is at DePaul University at the School of New Learning. The number here is 410-319-8888, and their book is Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair Body Politics in Africana Communities. Am I allowed to talk about dreadlocks, Kimberly? Can I?
Sure. I like them.
I can notice. But they have their own complexity.
Most definitely.
And one of the interesting things this is something that I think is kind of very fundamental to the Western world, in that the marks of rebellion in the white world, or in the non-African American world, obviously, is what it takes from the black experience, whether it's hair, music, and this kind of explosion of young white dreads,
which is what we end the volume on.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, the voice of a woman who refers herself as phenotypically white, wearing dreadlocks, and what does that mean? How does her body then get red? And it's very interesting how she offers, multiple ways in which her body is red, from both sides, where she has white family members who are reviled by the fact that she has chosen to wear a
dirty hair. Or,
yes. Right. Like, why would you want to do that to your hair when it is already beautiful? Whereas she also has to deal with the Africana community, too, seeing her as suspect for choosing to approach wearing her hair this way, but also what does it mean in terms of her access or desire to gain access into the Africana community by choosing to wear her hair that way. And she explores that. That's in our section of the volume that we refer to as complexities, because we want to show just how complex these types of issues are.
Right.
And that you can't just simply look at someone, although this is typically what we do, look at someone and think that we can read immediately what they're trying to communicate or what it signifies for them to choose to wear their hair a particular way. But because we do, how then does that create the complexity of understanding someone's decision to wear their hair in locks?
Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that we also want to highlight is that, of course, we can talk about the black body in terms of being of African descent, of being Africana, the African diaspora. We also discuss blackness in terms of the social construction of blackness. What does it mean for us as a society to have socially constructed what it means to be black? How is that defined? What are some of the attributes to blackness that we, that we put on that label? So that you can have a chapter by Zika Gabande and Maggie Vine who talk about I'm real black when I want to be, examining J-Lo's racial assets. And how Jennifer Lopez was able to use this idea of the social construction of blackness to throughout her career with the men that she dated early in her career, with the roles that she selected, and how she slowly moved away from that and from her ethnicity and playing those types of roles, which had this more socially constructed connotation of blackness associated with it. And so I think that's really important, because sometimes when people look at our volume and read our volume, and some are confused about the chapters that are not necessarily written by people of African descent or solely focused on people of African descent. And it's because we can talk about this notion of the social construction of blackness. What does it mean to have that label, and how do we use that label in society to create difference amongst people?
One of the things that You wrote a chapter in the book, you know.
Yes, I did. One of my favorites.
It is a good one. But it's something I never thought about. Never even, especially not in the world we were describing it in terms of its role in the world of art and film. The whole expression of disabled black males in film. I mean, where did that come from?
Yeah, it was, you know, it's interesting because I started out on that project wanting to kind of take a particular stance as an academic and railroad the fact of how we seem to glorify a number of black men who happen to be in wheelchairs as a result of interpersonal conflict and violence. And so this became, you know, my opportunity to be on a soapbox. But sticking to the parameters of what we wanted to see happen in this volume, where yes, we critique, but yes, we also celebrate, I found myself as I was doing the research and looking at the three films in particular that I looked at. I looked at Biker Boys, Boys in the Hood, and Training Day. And then I also took a look at a ludicrous video that was out a few years ago called Stand Up,
where
there were also images of individuals in wheelchairs in that video. And what I found, in fact, contrary to where I was situating myself, is, in fact, we do see, not that these men are glorified, but they are still embraced as very much whole men and a part of our community. Very different than what we see happening when, for instance, a war vet returns back home, where we then see that individual as less than. And I'm not speaking individually, I'm speaking in terms of society, yes, how we view them, because they might be limited in terms of their limbs. They might be limited in terms of mental faculties, whatever it may be. That we see them as now less than because they're not the whole man they were when they left before war.
We have jumped up against the back of the clock here. And I want to thank both Kimberly Moffitt and Regina Spellers for joining us. Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Body Politics, and Africana Communities. Thank you so much for this book. And we look forward to actually having you back on, maybe having a series of discussions built around this for our community. I think it'd be a wonderful thing to wrestle with.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you both so much. And folks, I'm going to encourage you on the way out here to call 410-319-8888. Make your pledge of support, $88 or more, and this book is yours.
Get these out of the way quickly so that we can take in as much of this discussion as possible.
And if you make that call, don't forget everyone's name gets dropped into a hat. Somebody's winning a trip for two to...